Good afternoon. Welcome to another edition of Vox Pop. And today, let's check. Yes, it's Monday. So it is Medical Monday today. I'm Joe Donahue. I'll be filling in for Ray Graff. We are going to take all of your questions as we always do. We're going to have an amazing physician who is going to be here to talk about their work and about all of the questions that you may have over the next hour. All you have to do is join us. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. 1-800-34-TALK-1. It is Medical Monday, and it will start right after news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Joe Donahue in for Ray Graff. In the studio this afternoon, we welcome Dr. Joanne Favuzza, who is of the Capital District Colon and Rectal Surgery Associates, a practice of St. Peter's Health Partners Medical Associates. Dr. Favuzza is a board-certified colorectal and general surgeon. She specializes in the evaluation and treatment of the full range of colon and rectal conditions requiring surgery. This includes colon and rectal cancer, diverticulitis, Crohn's disease, and fecal incontinence, pelvic floor disorders, hemorrhoids, anal abscesses, fissures, rectal prolapse. It's a hell of a list, I must say. That's a list. To participate in today's discussion, all you have to do is call 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. And it is an absolute pleasure to welcome Dr. Favuzza to the roundtable. Am I saying your name correctly?
You are. Thank you for having me, John.
It's Joe.
Joe, sorry.
That's okay. That's fine. That's all right. I have to say, look, a minute, like 5 minutes ago, I didn't know who you were. You didn't know who I was. So we're on. We're equal.
Okay.
That's all good now. Ray is out, and I had some trouble finding the information as to who was on, and nor did I actually say at any time in our fumpering around, oh, hi, I'm Joe. But it's very nice to have you here. Thank you very much. We welcome your calls. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-34-TALK-1. 1-800-348-2551. It is quite a list when you go down the way we just did, but these are all related, right? These are all things. And what is sort of at the center of it, at the base of it, if you will?
So all of the things that I diagnose and treat have to do with the colon, the rectum, and the anus.
Yes.
And so there can be benign conditions, there can be malignant conditions, and they involve all of that entire area. So my days are very different from day to day. So I do simple things like hemorrhoidectomies, and then some days I'm removing cancers or doing colonoscopies. So every day is a little bit different. But we, as colorectal surgeons, do take care of a wide, vast arrangement of things.
Do most people come in contact with someone like yourself when they go and have a colonoscopy?
So I do colonoscopies. Certainly gastroenterologists do the majority of colonoscopies, especially screening colonoscopies. But it's, especially after something is found on a colonoscopy, patients will often get referred to me. That's the most common way that I will end up seeing a patient in my office, is that something abnormal is found on their colonoscopies. Like an advanced polyp that cannot be removed with the colonoscope, or they may have a cancer, and so they may need a removal of a portion of their colon. Maybe they found something in the anus, something abnormal, like a thrombosed hemorrhoid. So it could be something benign or malignant. So a lot of times I do get referrals for that reason, but then I also get referrals from people in the hospital when they come for diverticulitis. Primary care physicians refer us for a lot of anal rectal complaints.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a huge wide breadth of things that we treat.
We're going to go to calls in just a moment, and we welcome yours, 1-800-348-2551. A lot of folks who are lining up now, and we're getting their information, and we'll go to those phone calls in just a second. We'll add you to the list if you want to get in. 1-800-348-2551, as we talk about colon and rectal issues on the program. Diverticulitis, what is... There was a time in my life where I never heard about it. And then all of a sudden I hear it's like you talk to everybody and they've had some dealing with it. And I'm fascinated by that because did we just learn a lot more about it, or did we give it a louder name, or what happened?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think it's really important to differentiate between diverticulosis and
yes.
diverticulitis.
Okay.
So a lot of people have diverticulosis, and that will be something that's found on a colonoscopy report. And that's the pockets or outpouchings that are found typically in the sigmoid colon. Now, when those pockets get inflamed or perforate, basically that balloon pops, that causes pain and inflammation. That's diverticulitis. So that diverticulitis is the inflammation of those pockets. And we are seeing a lot more patients with diverticulitis. I can tell you we see a lot of patients that get admitted to the hospital with diverticulitis. You know, there's not one cause of diverticulitis, but certainly low fiber, sedentary lifestyles, obesity, those are all common causes. Constipation, all of those things contribute to the diverticulitis.
And if you think of this, and I don't want to oversimplify it, although I guess that ultimately is my job, but it is when you have the colon, it's on the outside, right?
Yes, the pockets are outpouchings on the outside of the colon
right.
that get inflamed and perforate, and they become inflamed. And what can happen is that, you know, there's micro perforations or small, tiny holes that can leak out bacteria that can form sometimes an abscess, sometimes get form an abnormal communication or a fistula to another organ. So it can be pretty complicated.
So when you talk about another organ, give us an example. Like, what can happen there?
Yeah, exactly. So your body, when you have an inflammatory process, oftentimes will try and help you. And so your colon sometimes adheres to your bladder, which is right next to your sigmoid colon in
right.
the left lower quadrant. And that can form an abnormal communication with your bladder. And so people will pass air or stool when they pee, called fecal urea or pneumaturia. And those are symptoms of a colovesical fistula, so a fistula from your colon to your bladder. And that typically will involve surgical intervention, meaning we have to remove that portion of your colon to get rid of the problem.
We'll go to your calls in just a second, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. And Dr. Fufuza is with us here from the Capital District Colon and Rectal Surgery Associates. Let's see how I ask this. Do people have, given what we're talking about, do people have trouble talking about it with you, with their doctor, or do they open up pretty quick?
I think that colon and rectal problems can be embarrassing for patients,
yeah.
Especially things like fecal incontinence.
Yeah.
Women tend to have those types of issues. My job is to try and make people feel comfortable. So
right.
I try to put them at ease. I spend a lot of time down in the bottom area. So I try and just make people, you know, feel comfortable when they come to the office. You know, this is something that I do all day. I definitely try and put people at ease. But I understand how most people feel about this sort of thing. And it takes a lot of courage to come in and see a specialist like myself. So I understand that.
Let's go to line one. We check in with Chaz in Loudonville. Hello, Chaz.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
I am well. Good to hear your voice. Thank you.
Hi, Chaz.
Hello, Dr. Fufuza. You know me well.
Yes, I do.
Yep, and I want to say, first of all, that Dr. Fufuza has impressed me as a very very skilled surgeon, and she does a really good job. And I can tell this because when I read her notes about the procedure that she did on me a few months ago, I felt like I was watching the whole thing unfold in front of my eyes. So she's very good at what she does. I had a cancer in my rectum, and she removed it April 26th or 28th, if I recall correctly. And we're scheduled to have a reversal of my ileostomy on this coming Monday. And Dr. Favuzza she has a great sense of humor, and she also helps her patients feel very at ease with her.
Do you have any questions?
She's a good one.
Do you have any questions going into Monday?
Unfortunately, the only question that I have for her is a question that she cannot answer because I don't get scheduled until Friday.
Oh, okay. Oh,
so,
yeah.
I know the answer to that question. You are the first case of the day.
Oh.
That's what you're wanting
to
know. I have the inside scoop.
Do you want to be the first? I would think most people want to be the first patient of the day.
I think it really doesn't matter, you know, what time of day. You know, your surgeon is going to be on their game no matter what time of day.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But also, and it's nice to, I would just think, you know, the more time you have, you get there, you get it over with, you don't have to have it on your mind. And Chaz, we wish you nothing but the best. And I know everything will go well. And thank you very much for calling. That's very sweet.
See you Monday.
We'll see you Monday, one way or the other. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with the phone calls for Dr. Joanne Favuzza. We are talking about colon and rectal issues on Vox Pop and Medical Monday this afternoon, and we welcome you. 1-800-348-2551. We will continue after this short break. Welcome back to Vox Pop and Medical Monday on this Vox Pop today. I'm Joe Donahue filling in for Ray Graff. Dr. Joanne Favuzza is our guest of Capital District Colon and Rectal Surgery Associates, a practice of St. Peter's Health Partner Medical Associates. And we welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go. We go to Jim in Adams, Massachusetts. Hello, Jim. How are you?
Good afternoon, Joe. Yay, Joe. I always say yay, Ray, so yay, Joe.
Oh, thank you very much. All right.
Yay, Dr. Favuzza.
What question do you have this afternoon?
If I could, I'd like to have two, if I could.
One
concerning myself, one concerning my wife.
Okay, go ahead. First with you.
Okay, well, I turn 81 in January, and I find that no one wants to schedule me for colonoscopies any longer because of my age, but I've got a history. Our mother had diverticulosis or itis, I forget which it was, probably the more advanced condition, because she did have leaky bowel syndrome after the treatment for that. She had surgery for the leaky bowel syndrome. Conditioning that got taken care of. She had polyps removed, I believe, as well. And I've had polyps removed in my previous colonoscopy. So I don't find a problem with doing the colonoscopy, the preparation or whatever. You do a little bit of prep. You go in there, and if there's something that's going on, they have to remove any polyps, you're out. You don't even know what's happening. You wake up a few minutes later, you never knew what happened even. I find it a very simple, easy procedure.
All right.
What could we do about allowing people who have family histories? Yes, and my youngest brother, 6 years younger, a few years ago, he had leaky bowel syndrome himself and had that surgery for that condition and had it taken care of. So I've got a family history of these things, I guess you might say.
How does that figure in?
Hi, Jim. So I get this question a lot, and I do see a lot of patients over the age of 75. So the current guidelines are over the age of 75, you no longer need to have a colonoscopy. But I do agree with you. And age is just a number. You know, my dad is 80 and, you know, he's otherwise healthy. So I'll ask you, Jim, you know, if you don't have any other medical conditions, you're not on blood thinners, I don't think it's unreasonable for you to have another colonoscopy. Certainly another option would be that, you know, your primary care could order a Cologuard. And if that does come back positive, then you could go forward and do a colonoscopy if needed. I think that the concern is over the age of 75, you know, most patients have a lot of other comorbidities that the risk of putting them under anesthesia and undergoing the bowel prep and getting a ride, all those things can be a little bit difficult. And the likelihood that somebody over the age of 75 is going to die of colon cancer is without a family history. You know, that obviously that's different in your case, is on the lower side.
And I'm just concerned that, you know, so many years have gone by, that who knows, there might be polyps have developed and it could become cancerous if left too long.
I understand the concerns. We have other calls, so let me get to your wife question about your wife.
My wife's question, yes, she had ileostomy done like about 40 years ago. And I was hoping that they would have made it a temporary and reverse it, but they didn't. They removed, I guess, the whole lower intestine and I believe maybe a small portion of the upper intestine as well. Could something like that be reversed?
So it depends on how much of the lower intestine they removed. So if they removed her sphincters, or she had pre-existing issues with incontinence, basically leakage of stool beforehand, it might not be the best course of action.
Severely ulcerated colitis is why they removed it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she likely doesn't have much in the way of either her rectum left. It's likely if she had ulcerative colitis that they did not remove her sphincters, but that would be something that we need to take a detailed look at, you know, the operative reports and determine.
This time of year she has, you know, fairly difficult times in keeping a good seal on her skin with all the humid and hot conditions.
Yeah.
I think they're making the stuff cheaper anyway every year, and it seems like more and more she's changing her seal, sometimes several times a day during the summer months especially, and sometimes in really cold, dry weather in the wintertime.
Sure, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Jim,
okay.
We wish you both the best.
Hey.
Thank you very much for calling in, and we appreciate it. We welcome you. We have lines open, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Joanne Favuzza is our guest. We are talking about colon and rectal issues, and we go back to the phones and check in with Jim from Matamoros. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jim.
Hello. How often are false negatives or positives reported with Cologuard?
So that's an excellent question. So Cologuard, just for our viewers to understand, is a stool test that we do to detect early colon cancer or large advanced polyps. So what happens with Cologuard testing is that stool is placed on a card, you send it in, and they look at the stool for specific DNA that's released into the stool from either, you know, if you have cancerous polyps or a cancer itself. So there's abnormal DNA mutations that they're picking up. And so if that Cologuard test is positive, then you may have... that puts you at higher risk. So a positive Cologuard, it should be clear, does not mean you have colon cancer. So that's probably one of the most common questions that I get when patients come in, because they're very anxious that they had a positive test. About 13% of patients have a positive Cologuard test. But I can tell you, in doing all these colonoscopies, and the literature shows that only 10% of patients that have a positive Cologuard end up having cancer. So when you think about it in that regard, it hopefully will alleviate some of the anxiety that patients may have when they come back with a positive Cologuard test. If you have a positive Cologuard, 100% you need to have a colonoscopy. There's no way that you can get around that. And the reason for that is so that we want to ensure that you don't have a cancer or an advanced polyps. Cologuard does not pick up small polyps, and so that's the advantage of doing colonoscopies, because it picks up on smaller polyps. The best way to prevent colon cancer is to have a screening colonoscopy. Colonoscopies allow us to look at the entire colon, every single portion of that colon, every nook and cranny, to remove those polyps when they are precancerous or when they are benign. And that will prevent patients from developing colon cancer. That is the number one thing you can do. So I know Cologuard is readily available and much easier than the colonoscopies and the PrEP, but still, I will say colonoscopy is still the standard of care and is 94% to 95% effective in finding colon cancer and advanced polyps.
I mean, those seem like really good odds. Yes. as far as being accurate in the test.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sure is. There are some false positives. The false positives typically come from patients that are taking iron supplements. If you have hemorrhoids, if you have irritable bowel syndrome, let's say you had food poisoning, you had a bunch of diarrhea, so you may have a positive Cologuard. Different medications can do it as well, like proton pump inhibitors. So the false positives can be from medications. So very frequently do I find that patients with a positive Cologuard have a negative test, and that's okay. The guidelines, if you've had a Cologuard test, you should have one every 3 years.
All right. Let's go to Ken now in Albany. Ken, go ahead.
Hello. I have a question for the doctor about something she mentioned a few minutes ago about people who might have trouble with their transportation. I'm in that boat. Or rather, not in the boat. I don't have a local support group. I don't know people that I can just say, hey, tell you what, how about you take a couple hours out of your day and take me somewhere and sit there for a while when you don't have anything to do?
Sure.
I'm fresh out of chauffeurs. So I've gone, I'm many years overdue for a colonoscopy. And I really do want to get one for screening. What is the trick for convincing someone that I'm not an invalid, I'm not in danger of walking off, off a cliff or anything? I can get myself home from anywhere at any time. But I can't convince anyone of that. They're all afraid that I'll just go wandering off into the sunset or something.
Well,
so what is the trick to get to be seen?
Yeah, Ken, I think that's such a good question, and I'm sorry for you. But, I think that, the concern is that when you get a colonoscopy, you're getting some sedation. And so the concern is that after the procedure, you should not be alone. You want to have somebody that's watching you to make sure that you do okay. You don't have nausea, vomiting. You don't get any fevers. For the first day, we do recommend that somebody take you home, and then at least if somebody can be home for you. So I know at St. Peter's, you can get an Uber driver to take you home, but you do have to we would like for you to have somebody at home who is going to be able to be with you after the procedure. So I think,
doctor,
that most
there is no
go
there
ahead.
Is no one. Honestly, no one.
Yeah.
Well, meaning and I guess what is the as far as most practices, and obviously not just yours, but in most practices, with transportation being an issue, is it difficult to that's not really on you as much as trying to help? I guess I'm trying to figure out, and sometimes whether there's a caseworker or somebody who can come in and help with those situations.
Absolutely. And our office could definitely help him with that. So if you need a colonoscopy, we can work with you to get this to happen.
Yeah. All right. Good luck, Kent. Thank you very much for sharing with us. 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1 to talk to Dr. Joanne Favuzza. And we go to Rebecca in Clifton Park. Rebecca, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question for the doctor about mucosal melanoma.
All right. Now, this may be off topic, but we'll see what we can do. Go ahead.
Well, mucosal melanomas arise in the various places, and one of the places it arises is anorectal.
Okay.
So one of my questions is, has she ever seen it, and has she seen it metastasize?
I have seen it. It is pretty rare, and it is something that does have a high risk of metastasis, yes.
Have you seen it metastasize to the spine?
I have, yes.
And then where do you go from and that's moving on to another?
Correct. And, that's really where I would get our medical oncologists involved heavily.
All right. We welcome your calls, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-34-TALK-1, 1-800-348-2551. I want to go back to the call before, I guess two calls ago, when we were talking about family history. How important is that in your practice and getting that information to know what you're dealing with?
So family history of colon cancer, especially a first-degree relative, that is extremely important, that information, because you really should, if your family member has had colon cancer, you want to know when they were diagnosed, and you should have your colonoscopy if you are a first-degree relative. So if my father had colon cancer, I should have my colonoscopy 10 years before he was diagnosed is typically what we say. So you are at increased risk of developing colon cancer if you have a family history of colon cancer or a family history of even precancerous polyps. Not all polyps are the same, though. So it's really important that you talk to your gastroenterologist or surgeon about what types of polyps these are, because they all are different. And some never, ever turn into a cancer, and some have high risk.
I know someone who have suffered with Crohn's disease for many, many years and then found out their granddaughter had Crohn's disease. And I guess so that is something that can play into that as well.
Correct. Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, you have an increased risk of colon cancer as well. And that is something that I will ask when people come in for colonoscopies.
1-800-348-2551. We're going to go to Linda in Troy before we take a break. Hello, Linda. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Hi. Yeah, it's a little weird talking about this on the radio.
I understand.
But anyhow, I've got a problem with my intestines. I've got radiation enteritis, and I have short bowel syndrome. So the last time this has been, for 20 years now. But the last time I had a colonoscopy, there were a couple of little polyps that they cleaned up there. But they also told me that I have friability, and it was it was a concern. So I haven't had a colonoscopy now since I guess I'm 21, so like three or four years. And I was just wondering, should I risk it, find a surgeon who's confident enough to go in there, or should I, get some kind of screening? I haven't gotten much done in the past couple of years. And I want to be around for a while.
Sure. Sure. Linda, that's a great question. And unfortunately, when you've had radiation, those risks don't go away with time, which sounds counterintuitive. You think over time that the risk of radiation would decrease. So it's unlikely that the friability of your intestines, that is going to go away. So I think based on that, then we need to decide how we want to assess your risk of colon cancer based on your prior polyps. So I think talking to your gastroenterologist or your surgeon about what type of polyps they were, if they were hyperplastic, I probably would say there's no urgency. The other thing that I would want to know is if you are on some blood thinners, making sure that you come off blood thinners because your intestines are already pretty friable. And so if you're on blood thinners, then that would increase your risk. You know, you could do a Cologuard. That would be another option if you don't want to have a colonoscopy. But I bet that your Cologuard would be positive because of the friability of your intestines, because your you know, blood is, you know, kind of coming from your intestines. And so then the what would we recommend? We'd recommend a colonoscopy. So I do think a good prep and good sedation are key to having an uncomplicated colonoscopy. And I don't think that you should not have a colonoscopy because your intestines are friable or you've had radiation.
Mm-hmm. What about a CAT scan? Does that work with your intestines? Or?
So the CAT scan is really taking pictures on the outside. So the only way to look on the inside is doing a colonoscopy. And colon cancer mm-hmm. starts from the inside out. So the only time yeah. that you actually will see a cancer on a CAT scan is when it's pretty big. So when it's greater than typically like a centimeter or two, are you going to pick that up on a CT scan? And the best way to prevent cancer is to intervene when they're polyps, when they're small.
Mm-hmm.
Linda, thank you very much for calling. We wish you the best of luck and getting the information that you need. We welcome your phone calls, 1-800-348-2551. Dr. Joanne Favuzza is with us. Capital District Colon and Rectal Surgery Associates, a practice of St. Peter's Health Partners Medical Associates, and we welcome your calls, 1-800-348-2551. We will go back to the phones after this short break. Afternoon. Welcome back to Vox Pop. I'm Joe Donahue in for Ray Graff. It is Medical Monday on Vox Pop. We are talking about colon and rectal issues. Dr. Joanne Favuzza is our guest, and we welcome your calls at 1-800-348-2551. Got about 15 minutes or so, so if you have a question, now's the time. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Michael, who joins us in Adams, Massachusetts. Our second call from Adams, Massachusetts. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello. I'm a little uncomfortable mentioning this, but all my life, I'm 74, by the way, had a colonoscopy when I was 60, and I was clean as a whistle. I was told. I was out of it. I don't want to be aware. But I've always been a deep wiper when I do number two, and sometimes I'm not very, not often, okay, but every once in a while my hemorrhoids are attacked too much, and I'm wondering if that should be something I should be concerned about if I do this test, because I understand it's looking for blood.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations on getting over your queasiness of talking about it. Go ahead.
So I do think that your that blood that you're seeing is probably from maybe some inflamed hemorrhoids. So hemorrhoids in and of themselves are not abnormal. We all have hemorrhoidal tissue. They increase and decrease in size. You have two types. Yep. You can have external hemorrhoids. You can have internal hemorrhoids. And so yep. likely if you're aggressively wiping or getting in there deep, you might be, you know, inflaming or irritating those internal or even external hemorrhoids. And so I would definitely say don't sit on the toilet for long periods of time. Don't bring your phone into the bathroom. Try to maybe use baby wipes to get clean and then just pad the area dry. You don't want to aggressively wipe, especially if you have external hemorrhoids. I would not recommend overly wiping, and that will help probably decrease your risk of bleeding. There is an incident, a higher incidence of positive tests in patients that have bleeding from, you know, hemorrhoids for sure with Cologuard. So, you know, if you do it and you're, I would definitely maybe wait to do the Cologuard test until your hemorrhoids are not as inflamed, and so that you don't get that false positive.
I was going to ask that question about the inflammation. Typically, how long does that take to cure, or not to cure, but to get regulated?
So that can depend on a lot of things. So the size of the hemorrhoids for sure, but most of the time your hemorrhoids are inflamed because of constipation, pushing, straining,
right,
sitting on the toilet for long periods of time. So really it's about getting to the root of the problem and increasing the fiber in your diet. We definitely as Americans don't eat enough fiber in our diet. So supplementing when you need to. Toileting habits, like avoiding sitting on the toilet for long periods of time, that's going to help decrease the pressure down there. Because even just gravity is going to cause engorgement of their hemorrhoids if you're sitting there, you know, texting. So you want to get in and get out. Do your business.
Maybe somebody else has to use the bathroom,
that's
for God's
right.
sakes.
Right.
Just hurry up. I know you know nothing about this. At least I don't think you know anything about this. But I have a question that has just plagued me over the last week.
Okay.
Which is, I've noticed, I teach. I go to school. I teach at Bennington College. And invariably, I'll put on a video. And say a YouTube video. And right in the middle of the video, it stops and it says, "Do you have stuck poop?" And I can't tell you how that just is. The hilarity that ensues amongst the students who hear this. But since I've noticed that now, I've realized that almost every ad seems to deal with that. Do you have any sense as to why that is the case?
Constipation is a very common problem, and a lot of it has to do with our low fiber intakes. And so increasing the fiber in your diet is the number one thing you can do in fruits, vegetables. And if you can't get it in your diet, then even taking something like Benefiber is really useful to unstuck that poop, to get it flowing. That is the key. And that will prevent you from having to sit on the toilet for long periods of time. It'll prevent your hemorrhoids from getting engorged and inflamed. That is really going to help. Also, increasing your water intake, making sure that you're drinking enough water is key. Decrease those carbonated beverages. That is the key. And sugary sodas, that sort of thing. Increasing your water intake is key.
Let's go back to the phones. We go to Stephen in Hudson, New York. Stephen, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I want to try to be as quick as I can. I was diagnosed about 25 years ago with Crohn's disease. About 20 years ago, I had a bowel resection, ileostomy, and was pretty symptom-free. Would take colorestamine, I think, for regulation, but I never had any recurrence. Recently, about 8 months ago, I had an abscess, and down it was they thought it was a fistula, and they had to go back, and now I'm Tremvaya after being off of Crohn's medication for a while, and had a surgery where they did the fistula and created the band and the loop, and had that done about a week and a half ago, and the surgeon wasn't really clear about how long I might have to have that and whether, that can be in for any length of time and the hope to have that removed. Could you talk about that type of surgery and what to expect over the long term and what I should be, questions I should be asking about my, the future with something like that?
Sure. I think that's an excellent question. I'm sorry. That sounds like a very complicated history. So after this recent surgery where you had an abscess, I think the key thing would be to ensure that abscess has resolved. And how do we know that? You don't always have to do a CT scan in order to identify that. So as long as you're not having pain, you're not having any fevers or chills, that likely means that things are settling down. And the loop ileostomy is likely helping that area to settle down. Especially if you have a loop, your surgeon was probably thinking that eventually we may be able to reverse your ostomy, and that will be when things have settled down.
I don't have an ostomy. I had the perianal Crohn. So what they put in was the band.
Oh, setons?
Yeah, for the fistula. So they created that loop.
Gotcha. Yep.
So the I don't have the ileostomy anymore. I had that when I had the resection 20 years ago. And after 3 months, they put everything back together and I got rid of the ostomy bag. But that was 20 years ago. This was a week and a half ago where after the perianal abscess, they went in and they realized that, so they completed that loop, and now it's supposed to be draining and healing, and they said that could be in there for months or forever, but it's been very painful over the last 2 weeks. I have another appointment next week, and I was really looking for, like, what I should be asking, because I really didn't ask the surgeon. I kind of rushed into it, and it's like, you know, okay, go ahead and do it. And now I don't know if that was exactly the right thing to do.
I think it sounds like the perfect thing for you to do. Sorry, now you have an anal problem. It sounds like before it was an intestinal problem.
Yeah, I'm
sorry. No, it's okay.
The fistula was, yes.
Yeah,
it was
complicated.
That was a perianal abscess, and now it's perianal Crohn's.
Gotcha.
It can occur anywhere in the digestive tract, and they think it went from the ileum down to down there. So
yeah, so the ileum is the most common area. The anus is the second most common area. So as far as anal,
I got them both.
Yeah, you have both. I'm sorry about that. Anal fistula, sure. You have a seton, which is that rubber catheter. That's going to help that area drain. So similar to what I said about the intestines, we want to make sure there's no evidence of any recurrent abscesses. So do you have any new lumps or bumps in the area? Any fevers or chills? That's a good sign. That means that the inflammation is decreasing. Really, it's going to be a conversation that your surgeon and your gastroenterologist have in terms of how you're responding to your medical therapy. So when your medical therapy is optimized, and typically I like to do a flexible sigmoidoscopy where we look inside your anus and your lower rectum to assess that response. So that's likely what your surgeon's going to be looking for to see, okay, yes, that person has residual disease. It would probably be a bad idea to remove that seton, because removing it would mean that your abscess could come back, and then you have to go through that surgery again. So we don't want to remove that or do the second stage or whatever needs to happen for your fistula until we know that basically you have quiescent disease, that your disease is gone or is in remission.
Well, I guess that's my question, is now that I'm on the Tremfya, the biologic, how are they going to know whether I'm actually getting to the point where things are well enough to where they can remove that? And, you know, like you said, a sigmoidoscopy, is that what I should be asking questions about? Because I don't want to have this in forever, but I would like to know when they can tell that these biologics, and Tremfya in particular, is working to get to where that, you know, I would like to have that taken out at some point in the future.
Right. You know, I think it's probably going to be about 3 to 6 months, if I'm being honest. I would not think about removing a seton or even investigating your anus or rectum for at least 3 to 6 months. You need some time for that biologic to have effect before, you know, we do
and
something.
And they can tell the biologic is working how?
So your gastroenterologist will do some blood tests, and then they would likely be the ones responsible for doing the flexible sigmoidoscopy. But it's going to be a few months. And believe me, you know, I think I would say I would rather you keep that seton in versus having a recurrent abscess or infection that requires you to have another surgery.
Stephen, we wish you well. Thank you very much for the call. We just have a few minutes. I'll try to get in as many as we'll do a lightning round here, doctor, and see how many of these we can get to. We go to Marta in Poughkeepsie. Go ahead, Marta.
Hi there. Thank you. This is an herbal remedy for external hemorrhoids that I know works, proven. Yarrow is the name of the root, W-A-R-R-O-W. And you fresh or dried.
Like bow and arrow?
yarrow, like a bow and arrow, but a Y.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you pour boiling water over it and let it sit at least for 6 hours, and then using a cotton ball, you just dab it on the external hemorrhoids, and they heal up. And this was an herb they used in the olden days before antibiotics and surgeries on the battlefield. They wouldn't fight unless yarrow was in season, because that was the only hope you had if you were chopped up with swords and such.
Oh, dear. Okay, well,
Thanks, Marta. That
took a turn. Okay. When people come to you and they ask about herbal remedies, and obviously it's a fair point, but all can be factored in, right?
Absolutely. I really try to stress to people, keep it simple.
Yeah.
There are so many creams and suppositories out there. The number one thing that you can do to prevent your hemorrhoids from getting inflamed is to not get constipated and do not sit on the toilet for long periods of time. Drink plenty of water. The creams, suppositories, all those things, they may provide temporary relief, but they usually don't do a lot.
Let me go back to the calls. That brought up a question in my mind, but we don't need it. So let's go to Kay. Kay, go ahead, in Schenectady.
Yes, hi. I had an anal tumor removed back in 2013. I've been getting regular colonoscopies every year. Mm-hmm. Everything is generally okay, maybe a few polyps that they remove at the time that I've had the colonoscopy. But I would say in the last 4 to 5 years, I've had like this kind of very loose stools with lots of discomfort. It takes me kind of hours to sort of clear out. And then like a few days later, I might be constipated for a couple of days, often with just like lots of stomach and belly pain and discomfort. What would be the first step to figuring out what's going on with me?
Doctor, first step.
So first step is colonoscopy. That is the only way to diagnose something like irritable bowel syndrome, which is maybe something that you're alluding to, is to do a colonoscopy and make sure there's nothing else going on.
All right. Let's see. I think we have time for one more call. Let's go to Sue in Poughkeepsie. Hello, Sue.
Hello. I would like to know what made your guest decide to specialize in the specialty that she has chosen.
Of all the parts of the body, what brought you to the colon?
Yes.
You know, Sue, I love this question. I love when patients ask me this question. So I fell in love with the colon, rectum, and anus in medical school. Loved the anatomy, the physiology. My mentors along the way and like my residencies definitely influenced me. I do love the variety in my day-to-day. I get to do so many different things from the colon, the rectum, the anus, so many different pathologies. Every day is different. I get to do so many different things. And so I love the variety. I love the patients. I love being able to cure patients of their cancer or their hemorrhoids, whatever it is.
It has been wonderful having you on. Dr. Joanne Favuzza is from Capital District Colon and Rectal Surgery Associates. I so appreciate you being here. A delight to have you on the program. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Joe.
I apologize to all the folks that we left on the line. We left many on the line, but don't worry. We'll tackle this subject again in the future. Underwriting support comes from Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing a continuum of care for seniors, offering them opportunities to live and age gracefully with dignity and respect. daughtersofsarah.org. Thanks to our engineer Zach Malloy. I'm Joe Donahue. Tomorrow it's Birding with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. That's tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Stay tuned now for the best of our knowledge.